Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is a Friday. Friday, February 4th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17, almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can print off the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. And you can also download from the App Store of your choice, Google Play or Apple App Store, a complete, safe, private, free app. Just type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you'll get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And listening to those shows, sometimes repeatedly, is a great way to formulate a tutorial for yourself to learn how to use these tools and to build your skills in a variety of different situations that might relate to finances, emotions, relationships, physical aches and pains, etc. We hope people do that soon and often because many times that leads to comments and questions or testimonials. And if you have any of that that you'd like to share with us, give us a call at 563-999-3581. And once you've called that number, press 1. It'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. And as I say in most of the shows, we appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. And I say the word intention rather than goal because in this work we understand that whenever we set a goal for something that we don't achieve, it continues to run in our system. So we learn to manage our goals differently, and we learn to acknowledge and talk about plans and intentions that stay in that category of thought where I haven't elevated it to the level of behavior. I haven't told my mind, show me what behaviors I need to do to make this happen. And our intention with this work is to be of service. It's okay if we're not, it's okay if we are, but our intention is to be of service, and so we keep trying to modify what we're doing, and we appreciate any feedback in one direction or another that lets us know if we're living into that intention. The other thing we're doing this year is we're working with the Way of Mastery, and we're in the second lesson of the Way of Mastery, maybe about halfway through it. And one of the things that came up on Tuesday in the support group was we were listening to a Guy Finley talk, one of his presentations, where he talked extensively about the paradox, the parable, the koan, a statement which seems to contradict itself. You know, in order to live, in order to save your life, you've got to die, etc. These, from the Western, what we call the Western scriptures, there are a number of confounding, conflicting statements that if they happened in the Eastern tradition, they would be called a koan. And a koan is a statement that catches the conscious logical mind in a loop. A koan might be do nothing and nothing is left undone. Another koan is no ignorance, no end to ignorance. So I mention this as a sidebar because where we left off yesterday in the second lesson of Way of Mastery is right before the next heading. And these headings were created, and they weren't actually spoken in the original download. But the heading for this next section is probably going to sound like a contradictory statement or a koan to the Western mind. Mastery arises from innocence. Mastery arises from innocence. And this ties into what we've been told already. This is about noticing when we take ourselves seriously and dropping that, choosing to release our attachment to being serious, to getting it right, to knowing the answers, and to do that with childlike innocence and play and joy. So the heading of this chapter, or this segment of this chapter or lesson, is Mastery Arises from Innocence. In these lessons, we will create a system or a pathway upon which you can walk. You don't have to. No one can force you. Over and over in these lessons, we're reminded we have the choice of what we create moment to moment. So it's not by coincidence that it says we will create a system or a pathway upon which you can walk. And if you choose to do that, you will be choosing to deliberately cultivate the quality of awareness and consciousness that is necessary to stabilize that awareness so that you can bring it to each and every moment of your experience. In order to stabilize my conscious awareness, in order to have the ability to choose consciously what is the focus of my attention moment to moment, I have to cultivate, deliberately cultivate, a quality of awareness that is not there now, a quality of awareness I was not trained into in my life. But these lessons, these suggested exercises, will, if they're done, if you choose to do them, they will create a system or a pathway. And then if you choose to deliberately focus on applying them, it will help you cultivate the quality of awareness that is necessary to stabilize your awareness so you can bring conscious focus to your awareness in each moment. And that's how you move, that's how you deepen, that's how you experience the way of the heart. Imagine then being able to experience whatever arises and maintaining a sense of spaciousness, innocence, and ease. That same spaciousness, innocence, and ease that you've only had in fleeting moments of enlightenment or connection or deep awareness. For instance, know you the experience when things are going well and you are singing a happy tune and life seems to be moving ahead? Do you know that experience? Imagine that same quality of trust, faith, certainty of purpose, even when the buildings are crumbling around you and the bank account has gone dry. Just imagine being able to look at those events with the same sense of innocence and wonder with which you would look at the eyes of your beloved. Such a quality of awareness is perfect mastery. Within it are discovered perfect peace, perfect freedom, perfect joy, and uninterrupted communion with all of creation. And if you would well receive it, that quality of feeling intimately one with all of creation, which is what you have been seeking as a soul, since first the identification with creation called ego began. So it's interesting here. If you would well receive it, it's always there. It's always being offered. It's being given endlessly. It's part of your existence. It's part of your connection to creation. The perfect peace, the perfect freedom, the perfect joy, and the uninterrupted awareness of your communion with all of creation. To be aware of it, all you need to do is receive it. You have to be willing to receive it. Why do we need to be willing to receive it? Because once we created the dream of separation, the belief and the identification with egoic thoughts, conflict and the experience of separation were born in that moment. And everything you've ever attempted to do since then has been an attempt to overcome that dream of separation, that experience of being separate and separated from reality, life, your creator, etc. And to try to gain back what you felt you'd lost. The thing is, it's that the ways you've tried to do that do not work. Because you're using the same mechanism of thought, the same identification as being in the driver's seat and the one who must be and do it all, that conscious logical thought, that egoic intellectual processing, that's what created the dream of separation, and you're using that to try and end the dream of separation. It can't ever work. The world of conflict, fear, guilt, and unworthiness, and the world of the kingdom lie side by side within your own mind. the eye of the needle that one must pass through is the recultivation of the innocence of a child. It is for this reason that I often taught, become again as a little child to enter the kingdom. The cultivation of the way of the heart. Please pay attention to how many times you hear the word cultivation in just these first two lessons. Cultivating. What does that mean? What does that word mean to you? What is it to cultivate something? It's not that you drop a seed on the ground and walk away. There's preparation of the soil. There's fertilizing the soil. There's tilling the soil to soften it. There's choosing the seeds carefully. There's planting them individually sometimes at just the right depth. There's adding moisture to the soil. There's making certain that there's enough light, sunlight, nutrient light hitting the soil to warm it to just the right temperature so that the seed germinates and sprouts. Cultivating, the cultivation of the way of the heart is that pathway whereby you deliberately and consciously choose to become again as an innocent child. Imagine choosing the perspective moment to moment in your life that you are a child at play in a kingdom. Choosing the innocence, the playfulness, the willingness to allow, accept, embrace all things. Just as you were in the beginning before you ever created and then incarnated into this dimension of experience that seems to be permeated by a sense of conflict and separation before you ever had a body, before you ever incarnated into physical form, you had this absolute wonder and awe and innocence and awareness. So this chapter goes on, this lesson goes on to let us know that you are a creator of your experience and what you decree is. I would ask you now to begin to put into practice put it into the practice in your awareness that what you decree is. So whenever you happen to be someplace, whenever, wherever it comes to your mind, just for a moment, truly become aware of where you are. Where are you? Are you not having an experience of being within a body on a little blue globe spinning through space? Doesn't it seem to you that you are in the middle of a room or walking in a forest preserve or sitting in a chair in a waiting room for a professional office? How did that happen? Are you not within an environment in which there are certain weather patterns going on around you? Perhaps there are sounds that are coming into your ears? Just for a moment, whenever it comes to your mind, work at being truly aware of where you are in that moment. Can you feel the weight of your body as you stand upon your feet or sit in the chair or lie on the bed? Do you notice a tension in your neck? Is your mind racing? Are there thoughts bouncing around in there? Can you begin to bring awareness to exactly what is in this moment? From a place within you of complete innocence and complete allowance and acceptance. You have a saying in your world, quote, it is what it is. That is the beginning of wisdom. You will discover that what is what you have chosen to make of it. Be therefore where you are in each moment and deliberately decide, to accept wholly that you are experiencing what you have decreed in this moment, and it has no cause whatsoever except your choice to experience it. And this is something you're going to have to cultivate, because it's the opposite of what you've been trained to believe. If you were raised in a Western culture, you were trained to focus on outside events and to attribute any internal experience you have to those outside events. Rest assured that whatever the mind may try to say to you, and your mind will throw up all kinds of refutations of this observation, try to demonstrate to you what has been programmed into it for decades. She made me angry. He hurt my feelings. That is tragic. That is pleasant. That is overwhelming. That is marvelous. The outside event is what causes my upset. So rest assured that whatever refutation your mind might serve up for you, if you did not wholly, completely want to be right where you are in any moment, you would not be there. If you are in a body in the field of space and time, rest assured, you desired it. You chose it, and it is here. And again, this isn't necessarily your conscious logical mind. This is referring to the higher S self, the spark of life, the spark of the divine mind that chose to be here. Begin here. There's no need to judge it, no need to ask it to be different. Just truly be aware of what is. If you're feeling your body sitting in a chair, allow this thought to come into the mind. Quote, I have literally created this experience. Something within me is so grand, so powerful, so vast, so beyond anything that scientists have ever come up with, that I have literally crystallized into the field of experience an awareness of being a body in space and time. This experience has come forth from the field of my consciousness. This is the gift to me of the Creator. And the Creator asks only that I learn how I am creating as the Creator creates. I have said many times that creation looks upon you and says, this is my only creation, and it is good. It is just as it should be. For the Creator marvels at what you are, knowing perfectly well that what you are emerged from the Creator's holy mind. So please, likewise, look upon your creations and marvel. How is it that you could abide in this time on this planet? How could it be that you can place yourself behind the wheel of an automobile and actually get from point A to point B? That is a mystery and a marvel, and no one knows how it is done. Yet it is done, time and time again. The reason it is done is that all power has been given unto you, and what you decree is. A man or a woman shall decree a thing, and it shall be so. You have decreed this moment. Please own it. Be aware of what you have done. Cultivate the awareness of your power to create your experience each and every moment. For by owning it right now, you can begin to sense the incredible and awesome power that flows through you and the mind, the spark of creative mind that you are in each moment. That is the power to create. Begin by choosing now to cultivate the practice in this manner. Set the intention so that in each hour of your day for 3 to 5 minutes, you practice by bringing this quality of awareness to exactly whatever you are experiencing. Whenever that thought arises to do the practice, please watch the chance, watch the Western mind go into rigidity and decide to get out a calendar and block out every 15 minutes and say, here's a 3-minute block here and a 5-minute block there, and I'm going to set my alarm. Please notice the urge to try and control or get it right and judge yourself when you do it one way or another. This is about doing it when the thought comes to your mind. This is about cultivating a sense of awareness that arises naturally as you live your life day to day. So when the thought arises to do so, you do the practice then. Where does that thought come from? Well, what we're suggesting is it shouldn't come from your smartphone. Where does it come from? Imagine that you're going through the day and you've been hustling and bustling about. You've gone to your office or your work. You've talked to friends. You've bought groceries. You've done all of these things. And then suddenly, in the midst of all of that, the thought appears, oh, I want to focus on being aware that I am literally the creator of what I experience. When it arises in such a fashion, it will be because you have cultivated, you have initiated the desire, you have spent some of your mind energy focusing on this practice and this pathway. And if that arises in the middle of your day, do you think it happened by accident? No. The thought is penetrating your conscious awareness from the depth of your mind that rests right next to the mind of the Creator. Therefore, the power to generate that very thought is the effect of the Creator's will entering into your field of being, penetrating the veils of distraction, and shining forth as the thought. That's right, 5 minutes every hour. Can you feel the awesomeness of that? For truly, in truth, as always, you are linked to the mind of the Creator, and the Creator knows how to bring you back to complete freedom, perfect peace, and mastery of this entire realm. You do not know how to do that. The Creator knows how to do that. The One Mind, the Christ Mind, the Holy Spirit, the Great Comforter, endless names that we create for this process, for this energy, for this consciousness. Those who truly love creation and would truly awaken will feel something compelling them to master this simple practice for 5 minutes each hour. They will learn to delight in and look forward to it. Pretty soon, those 5 minutes will stretch into 6, then 10, then 15, and 50, until finally, there is established in their awareness the unchanging realization that everything arises. Everything that arises is something they have decreed, and so it is. 5 minutes every hour is not much to ask. For 5 minutes every hour, be as you are created to be. Allow yourself to be as you are created to be. Watch the tendency in the Western mind to should on yourself about this. There is no should about this. There is no great accolade to be won if you manage to get through an entire day where 5 minutes in every hour you spend doing this. There is no shame to be had if you wake up 3 days from now and realize you haven't done it once. That's the ego, either creating the acclaim or the shame. This is about the cultivation of awareness. Step us back to where we began today with the heading that says, mastery arrives from innocence. Mastery does not arrive from putting your nose to the grindstone and making sure that you set enough alarms on your iPad and your smart devices and the clocks around your house, and you pay your assistant to remind you to do this so that you never forget to do that five-minute exercise in each hour. That's not what mastery arises from. Mastery arises from cultivating the innocence, cultivating a presence of awareness, so that when the thought arises, oh, I should spend a few minutes tuning into the realization that I have chosen to be here, that I am creating this experience. And when I do that, I will feel the connection to the one mind, to the flow of creation. 5 minutes every hour, be as you are created to be. A creator decreeing that which brings forth experience. Catch it the next time you say, well, I'm really here because I have to be. I'm really just doing this because it's what I have to do. Catch that and see its false nature. See it as a thought of the egoic mind. Rest in the truth. I've chosen to be here. I'm choosing how I experience it. I can choose again if I don't like the product of my choices. Take the words ought, should, must, and have to, write them on a piece of paper, and look at them. And then light a match and burn the paper. Let it dissolve to dust. This is a symbol of allowing the energy you've given these words to become again as the dust or the ash of the ground. Clear from your consciousness all identification with such words, for all of them are denials of reality. So this is where the Western mind is just going to start flip-flopping and tying itself in knots. 5 minutes every hour? Oh, my God, how am I going to do that? Well, maybe if I get, maybe there's a special app I can buy. Maybe I can pay somebody to follow me around and poke me with a sharp stick for 5 minutes every hour. That's the opposite of what is being suggested. Even if I were to do that, it would not put me on the path which we are calling the way of the heart. So notice what your mind is doing when you hear a suggestion like, make the commitment to spend 5 minutes every hour realizing that you are creating your own experience. Notice what the Western mind does, and notice how quickly, how clearly this book comes out and tells us, take the words ought, should, must, and have to, and write them on a piece of paper, look at them, notice what comes up in you about them, and then burn it. Burn the piece of paper. Let it turn to dust. Use this as a symbol of allowing the energy that you have given to these words about how you need to and you should and you must and you have to, allow that energy to dissipate from your consciousness. Those energies are not on the pathway that we're calling the way of the heart. Clear from your consciousness any identification with such words, must, have to, need to, should, ought to. They are denials of the actuality of life. Many times I've shared with you, you need do nothing. Listen to these words and take them into yourself as though they are your own voice, because they are. You need do nothing. Well, what does that mean? I thought I was just told that in order to be on this pathway, in order to reconnect to my source, in order to stay in alignment with my true nature, I need to stop every 5 minutes and reconnect my awareness to the process of how I'm creating my experience of life and how I've chosen. I thought I needed to do that. That's the ego. Judging, comparing, criticizing, weighing, preparing you to either exalt yourself for such a fabulous job or berate yourself for failing at it. You need do nothing. You do not have to survive. Whoever told you that you had to survive? You do not have to make everybody happy. Whoever told you that you had to? Whoever told you that you could make anyone happy? That's one of the biggest lies you've ever been told. You do not have to abide as a body in time and space. Whoever told you that you had to? You do not have to pay your bills. Who told you that? There are people every day on this planet who refuse to pay their bills, who walk away from their job, who file bankruptcy, create a set of ripples of energy and effects that can be experienced one way or another according to your choice if you choose that. But the fact of the matter is you don't have to. You literally need do nothing. This is quite different than wanting or choosing to do something. You do not need to love your parents. You do not need to honor your father and your mother. You do not need to worship your creator, me, or anybody else. You do not need to love yourself. You literally need do nothing. For need is an expression of the perception that there is something you lack. Because you are one with all of creation, there is never a moment when you lack anything at all. We all know the mental mindset, the cultural conditioning, the family conditioning of how we aren't good enough until we do this or that, and we aren't lovable unless we have this or that. And in truth, we literally need do nothing. Can you allow the thought to emerge in your mind when you arise in the morning? I need do nothing today. I don't even have to get out of this bed. I don't have to go into an office. I don't need to fulfill that order. I don't need to say good morning to my mate. I literally need do nothing. For please, just observe, how can there be the power of freedom to choose and to create when you are being governed by the belief of the world that you must be in a certain way? The belief that you need to be acceptable to others, that you need to conform and fit in, that you need to dress the way others dress, that you need to be committed to surviving an extra day upon this plane. If those needs were true, there could be no freedom. There can be no freedom wherever there is need. So here we are, about to set up practicing for the first two axioms. These are the first two axioms of the Way of the Heart. These are to be built on, to be remembered, to be cultivated, there's that word again, worked with, massaged, focused on, observed, playfully, with childlike innocence, engaged with this practice. I am created as the Creator created me to be. I am free. And nothing sources my experience but me in each moment. Nothing has an effect on me whatsoever except for that which I choose to allow to affect me. I need do nothing. it's recommended that we take a breath here. You don't need to, but it's recommended that you take a deep breath, hold it at the top, and slowly exhale. The lesson goes on to say, in the beginning, we would suggest that you practice this second axiom in the morning and in the evening as you are arising and as you are retiring. At least twice in each of your days, we would ask you to cultivate for 5 minutes the repetition of this thought so that you feel it in your bones. I need do nothing. Now please watch what arises within you as we read that paragraph again. Here is a suggestion. It's only a suggestion. You may be asked, you may be called from the heart of your being to ignore this entire paragraph. You might be asked, it might come to you from the depth of your mind and your awareness to do this exercise more than just twice a day and more than for 5 minutes. And yet you need do nothing. So please watch the mind. Watch the koan, watch the contradiction that can get developed in the Western mind when somebody says, here's a practice you might do. At least twice in each of your days, we would ask you to cultivate for 5 minutes the repetition of this thought. What's the thought? I don't need to do this exercise. I don't need to take my next breath. I don't need to stay alive. I don't need to go to work. I don't need to say good morning to my mate. I may choose to do all of those things, some of them or none of them. This is not about doing the exercise because it was assigned. This is about what can awaken in your consciousness when you allow these thoughts in and you cultivate them, you work with them, you bring your awareness to them, you analyze, you observe with childlike innocence. You notice any tendency for judgment or constriction or contraction, and you release it as quickly as you can, moving back to that childlike innocence. This thought, I need do nothing, will come as quite a shock to your consciousness, and your mind will say, but wait a minute, I have all these things I have to do. What about this? What about that? Oh my goodness, is the world going to stop spinning if I stop needing what I need? Dear friends, that would be up to the world and not up to you. The power of these first two axioms will be what everything that follows is built upon. And yet, everything that follows is merely a way of watering those two axioms and making them the anchor of your awareness. For when an anchor is firmly in place, you will literally create whatever you so desire, and you will create it from perfect freedom and perfect deliberateness. You will even transcend miracle-mindedness. For miracle-mindedness is still a stage of perception, which is just sort of mastery. It's just short of mastery. Mastery comes when you know that you are literally and deliberately creating. There is nothing miraculous about it. You will decree a thing and it shall be so. That as the Creator creates. For while the Creator marvels at you, the Creator knows perfectly well that your creation was not a miracle. It was very deliberate. It was born from the pure radiance of the energy we call love, life, the world, God, the Creator. The Creator does not sit on its throne and say, I wonder if I'm worthy to create my children, my offspring. I wonder if I'm worthy to express myself through the divine spark of consciousness that my children are. It does not enter into the holy mind of the Creator. I wonder if it's okay for me to create a solar system. The Creator receives a thought, or you might say a thought emanates within its holy mind. He decrees it, and it is so. And the Creator looks upon all things and says, this is what it is, and this is fine, just the way it is. The last segment is titled Exercise in Conscious Creation. The third and last exercise we would give you in this lesson is this. Choose something that you do every day that you are convinced is so utterly ordinary that it certainly does not hold any power or any spiritual meaning whatsoever. This could be something as simple as having a glass of water, brushing your teeth, or yawning. Choose something that you know you do every day and decide to make this the focus of your worship, the focus of your conscious awareness for that brief period of time, so that when you do it, you stop and you say, ah, I did this and it is done. It is very good. Even if it is something as simple as raising your head from the pillow, become aware of it, own it as self-created, and as you contemplate that action, say this to yourself. It is very good. I have done this. It is good. I have created this experience. Again, those that are truly committed will find that they begin to enjoy this process, and they begin to apply it more and more to other events in their lives. They begin to reawaken the childlike joy of building a castle in the sandbox. For in truth, that is all you are doing here. Consciousness is your sandbox, and you are creating castles. You've simply forgotten to enjoy them. When you want to be rid of them, you lament, oh, but if I give this up and change my mind and move on, what will happen to my creations? What will others think of me if I act like a child and just take my little plastic shovel and knock the castle down and go in and have a sandwich for lunch? What will people think of me? Will I fit in? Will I be accepted? Will I be judged? Will I be persecuted? There is a position in your mind who could say, who cares? The opinions of others mean nothing unless you choose to make them mean something for you. Now we come to what concludes this lesson. So here's the question for you. What blocks you in your own mind? For even as you are hearing this, you may recognize a resistance. That resistance is the energy of fear. Uh-oh, what will happen if I follow this path? That part of your mind, called the ego, will rise up to tell you that if you listen to the one that some have called the savior of the world, it will take you to a path of destruction. That is because the voice for ego knows that it will be destroyed if this path is followed. You, the reality of who you are, cannot be destroyed. That resistance that comes up in you is fear, and fear is one of the energies which is out of alignment with the truth of the kingdom. Therefore, fear not, and continue in faith, for I say unto you, what you will discover at the end of this pathway is perfect freedom, perfect power, perfect spaciousness, perfect joy, and perfect peace of living, literally living in the kingdom of heaven. Choice is yours. For those of you that will feel this resistance come up so strongly, and for those of you that will yet call out unto me in your dreams and prayers, help me. Help me get through this. I say unto you, you walk not alone. I cannot be further from you than the width of a thought. And yes, you are the creator of that thought. I, too, embarked upon just such a path. Each axiom that I will share and shall refine, as well as the many exercises in the way of mastery, these are specifically exercises and truths that were given to me from the time I was initiated by certain Essene teachers in the way of the heart. Think about it. When my teacher said to me, it's time for you to go spend 40 days and 40 nights in the desert, don't you think I had a little resistance come up within me? I, too, had the choice. I had to notice that I was creating the thought of fear. I had to notice that I was separating myself from the great protection of the energy of creation, the awareness of the energy of creation. Some would call it the love of God. I had to physically move my body into the wilderness to move through my own rings of fear and discover what was on the other side. The pathway that I have walked is the same pathway that you are walking. And if our pathway is the same, then we all walk together toward the creation and away from illusion, pain, weakness, unworthiness, guilt, and even death. So engage in your exercises with great zeal, with great joy, and above all, with great outrageous playfulness. Play with this. You cannot be playing with this if you beat yourself up because you're not remembering for 5 minutes in every hour to do an exercise. If you're not remembering 5 minutes in the beginning of the day and 5 minutes in the end of the day to do that exercise and you beat yourself up, that's not playfulness. Learn to look with innocence upon all that arises. Abide lovingly with all of your creations, including the places within your mind where fear has made a home. Eventually, if you put these little exercises to work, much indeed will arise. The upset, the shame, the guilt, the judgment, the pain, the fear will arise. Practice then and practice well and practice with joy and playfulness. Know that you are loved, loving, and lovable forever, and that in truth the only thing that is occurring is that an old dream is being released, that a new dream might replace it, the dream of worthiness, peace, wakefulness, and union with all of creation. Again, I say, I come not alone in this specific work, but I come with many who support your healing and your awakening. Therefore, indeed, be at peace this day, beloved friends. Abide lovingly with your creations. Amen. So there we have it, the end of a couple weeks. The first two lessons of the Way of Mastery. Hopefully a clarion call to learn to dance and play and look at your life and all of your creations with innocence and understanding that if you don't like what you have created, you can still look on it lovingly, own it as your own creation, and choose differently in the next moment. And there aren't really any words to describe how at one and the same time, if you know, if you get, if you let this soak into your mind, if you let yourself practice even the first two lessons of the Way of Mastery, you don't need anything else. And yet, in the same moment that that is true, this work just deepens more and more profoundly as you go through the future, the coming lessons. So, we've only got about 4 minutes left. Call number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a brief conversation. What's on your mind? How can we support you? how are you finding this experience of going through the lessons as slowly and carefully as we are? Area code 513, you're in the air. Who do we have?
This is Tom. I have been enjoying very much the process and the speed at which you've been going through the Way of Mastery. And this morning, I don't know, I was just triggered to explore the Christ Mind Way of Mastery website and came upon the Yeshua letters icon and clicked on it and read the first letter. It was amazing. It helped me, you know, it gave me an insight as to, you know, where it all started. So I just wanted to check in, say hi, and thank you for your contributions to this work. And many blessings.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It is, there is a book titled The Yeshua Letters, and it's part of that pathway, as is the book, The Way of the Servant. And we will probably eventually get to that. I don't know if it will be in sequence, but it's a great idea that people can tap into reading segments of that book and or The Way of the Servant and or all kinds of other little snippets that Yaim has been putting out there over the years. So I'm glad you're finding it useful. Thank you for the call, letting us know that, and blessings.
Okay, so the first hour was pre-recorded. Dr. Tim had something he had to do. But Michael and I are live now for the second hour, so welcome. Today is Wednesday, June the 29th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Hope you've been enjoying The Way of Mastery. Dr. Tim has been reading that off and on for some time now. I think he started the first part of January, maybe not the very first week. And I have enjoyed it. And he's given several links where you can tap into the pre-recordings. He actually is saving these over on his website that is called Mindshifters Academy. And so you can go over there. I was trying to type in as I was speaking, trying to multitask here. Shifter Academy. And I'll give you the exact link of where you can find it. So if you go to, it's not coming up. Mindshifters Academy. Let's see if that gets it. Okay. So if you go to mindshifters-academy.org, then you can click on the three dots over that's at the far right of his menu bar. And one of the titles is The Way of Mastery Mindshifters Radio with commentary. And so he's put all of the links out there for each lesson that he has done. So you can go back and listen to those. He spoke yesterday and let us know where you can actually do free downloads of the book that he's reading, or you can order them. And so that's in the notes for yesterday. And so that way you can read along or pick up lessons that you've missed. We invite you to do that. So while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I will just tell you that both the Google and Apple stores have approved the recent update to the app. So if you haven't done the update on your phone, go to your Play Store, whether it's on Google for Android or Apple for the iPhone, and get the update for that. If you've not downloaded it, to start with, it's Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. You start typing that into your Play Store, and it'll pop up with like a glowing heart. When you click on it, you'll see mine and Michael's pictures. and you can download it for free. It's totally a private app. The only permissions it asks for is to use the internet. And then if you choose to save it to your phone after you've done a worksheet, it will ask to be able to access your file to save it to that. It doesn't ask for any other permissions to use your camera or your phone or your contacts or anything like that. And whatever you tell, it's totally private. You're the only one that gets it. So there's several things on the app and several changes we've made to correct some glitches. One of them being that when you clicked on the Rose and Butterfly story, it gave you a error page. And so now it goes to their website where we have the Rose and Butterfly story there. You can read it online, or you can click and download the PDF of it or the JPEG of it. And there's the news section where you can click and ask a question. It sends me the question, and we will address the question live on the show. And then I'll send you back an email and tell you what day and time we address your question. And so that's, you know, very beneficial. So we're offering support in all the ways that we can. For those of you who are doing the Mind Shifters and Steelpoint Breathing, July the 9th is the next one. However, we are going to postpone that. I'll be sending out an email, watch your email today, asking if everybody is okay with putting it off to the next week, which would be July the 16th, because Michael's going to be out of town on the 9th and probably will not have access to Zoom at the time. So anyway, so watch your email for that, and I see Michael has joined us, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here, that we get to engage in this conversation once again and move forward the understanding of all aspects of this monumental healing process that comes out of the first century Aramaic language and the understanding of the core of what it takes to change cause in this human energy system. It is quite amazing when you build the brain cells for the Aramaic understanding. I was talking to a physician recently who's actually been doing my work for almost 3 decades, and we've had extensive conversations. You know, he's trained in medicine, but the training doesn't include anything about healing. It only talks about treating diseases. You know, that's primarily the process, and very little is understood about the actual healing process. Yeah, you got a set of symptoms, you give a pill, the symptoms go away. But what happens if you want to overcome the side effects of that pill? You know, every drug is a disease disguised as a cure. You got to be real clear about that one. All you have to do is open the package insert on any drug and read all the diseases that it causes, and you know you've got a disease disguised as a cure. So we can treat something. We can get rid of a set of symptoms, you know, with this substance or that substance, this chemical or that. But what if you want to remove the side effects, remove the diseases caused by the drug, and then you want to address the actual energy that is the disease energy? And our offering is that's called healing. And few distinguish between healing and disease. And it takes the building of a set of brain cells beyond what most people even conceive of. I used an example, and you know, this gentleman's reaching the stage of, you know, refining, coming to new levels of comprehending the healing process and exactly what processing is, exactly what has to happen to move through these energies that are at cause level that most people never even conceive of or think of. And you know, if you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he gave us the clue, although you wouldn't know from the Greek translations what it means, likely. But he says you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. For those who having eyes do not see, those who having ears do not hear. And you go, well, what does that mean? Well, I use this example with him. I was actually in his office several months ago and watched him performing a very delicate and relatively invasive physical procedure on someone, one that I would not want to do. But I use the example of, so when you do that procedure, you know, I watched it too, and it was awesome to watch, and, you know, it was quite successful for the individual involved. But you've been doing that for years, and it was just, you know, fabulous to watch. But if I went in with my hands and my brain and started to do it, I wouldn't recognize anything that you're doing. I mean, I could look and watch them follow the mechanical outward motions, but I don't have the brain cells for, gee, you're inserting this thing inside, literally going into someone's bone. And, I mean, I wouldn't know how to tell whether it's gone through or not gone through or broken through or gone the wrong way. I mean, just wouldn't have any brain cells for it. You know, I used to be in the music business. I used to be a part owner of a music studio, and I was on the business end of things, and my partner was in the music end of things. And he would do production, and it was just awesome, the ear this man had. The eyes to see and the ears to hear that he had for music. And I'd be in the office and he'd say, oh, Michael, you got to come in and listen to this piece that we just created. And he would play the piece in its finished form. And then he'd say, no, listen, I'm going to take the strings out and I'm going to take the whatever out. And he'd do that and I'd listen and I'd say, well, do you hear those strings that were there a minute ago? Do you hear they're not there now? It's like, you know, I know it sounds different, but in a million years, I wouldn't know you took the strings out. And he said, well, but it's so obvious. It's like, it's so obvious to me because you have the brain cells for it. It's not obvious to me. I don't have the brain cells for it. I mean, I love music, but to have the brain cells for that. And you know, he'd pull different instruments in and, you know, bring in a voice and such. And it's like, yeah, I can tell that's better, but I really don't know why. So when I just put that bass voice in, oh, well, okay. And he had the brain cells for every piece of the puzzle for assembling an absolutely awesome production in a studio. I couldn't do that. Now, if I wanted to take the time to learn how to mix music and do that, and I don't know how long it would take. I don't know what that training program might look like. Probably to get to the level he was at. He'd been producing music for, geez, I don't know, 40 years. No, he was, no, wouldn't have been that long. He's probably in his, so probably 25 years he'd been producing music. You know, if I spent 5 years building the brain cells, I'd have the same recognition for, oh, yeah, but give me a little more of that tenor voice, a little less of the soprano. Yeah, there you go. Now bring in the violins. Yeah, okay, now just a little bit more bass and bring that in. And, you know, but you got to have the brain cells. If I watch this physician doing a procedure and then I put my hands on it because I saw him do it, geez, all you have to do is punch this thing in, draw a needle, and boom. He'd been doing it for years. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole, even though he showed me what to do and how to do it. I wouldn't do it because I recognize I don't have the brain cells. Well, in exactly the same way, in this arena of healing, we're talking about healing as compared to treatment. You've got to build the brain cells. And he and I have been carrying on this conversation for almost 3 decades. And for him, it's turned to a new level. I had shared back a few months ago, I went up to California with him to, we're working on creating a program that perhaps some big, and I mean big money people and politicians are going to get behind to actually deliver healthcare in America. And so he's developing his understanding, and he's like, well, Michael, I'm recognizing that without the forgiveness process, real healing doesn't occur. And so he's developing the brain cells over many, many, many hours of conversation for, and, you know, intensives and study and doing worksheets to really recognize where he's going. And so if you want to be able to mix a symphony in the world of healing, you've got to give up the story, the request, you know, I get often kind of goes like, well, I got $5 and 5 minutes to tell me everything you know. It's like, no, you don't get it that way. It's not going to come across for $5 in 5 minutes. And in fact, Yinka was saying that there were some people in the book study club out of England. She's really been working with people. She has a morning session. She's been working with people with worksheets. And she said, I've had a couple of people who are just like, you know, I want an instant fix. I don't want to work for this. I don't want to put my time into it. But like any other challenge, I don't care whether it's the mechanic who, you know, I drive into the lot and I've been listening to this engine and something's wrong and I don't know what long, and I drive in and he goes, oh, you got the new, and then the bolt's broken. And it's like, how did you know that? He had the brain cells for it. This question of understanding our place in the universe, what we're capable of, what's possible for us, and the end result being healing, is a pursuit that millions of men and women over thousands of years, in fact, tens of thousands of years, have worked to understand, to study, the shaman, the medicine man. Thousands of years. And it's interesting, you know, people get sick and they want an instant fix, or they're in pain and they'll do some work for a week or two until the pain goes away, and then they'll go right back to their old habits because they don't have the brain cells for anything else. So a big part of this, and one of the reasons why we're doing this radio show on an ongoing basis, why you can go back and pick up, I don't know, well over 3,000 hours of archives as a show, is each show builds a different set of brain cells. Each piece of the puzzle gives you the underlying content needed for your mind to be able to generate a perceptual construct that has greater understanding of this question that has driven tens of thousands of minds for thousands of years to understand. And then some people still want a pill for an instant fix. You are never going to find a pill to fix anything. You can find pills that'll treat symptoms, but you won't find pills that fix things. And so what we want to do with this work is build the brain cells for you to be holy. And that's got nothing to do with, you know, having your hands folded and being down on your knees, but to understand every level. And I want to address a different level today than we've addressed in a little while of this process of healing and building the brain cells. So that's kind of the direction that we're heading in. Miss Jeannie, thoughts?
Nope. And it's all quiet on the switchboard and in the chat room.
Okay. Did you say you had a hand up earlier?
Yeah, but it disappeared, so I'm not sure. It was a number I didn't recognize, and so I don't know. Maybe he'll come back later.
Cool. All right. So one of the things I want to talk about a little bit today, kind of a little different aspect and angle to understanding the whole process, is understanding what you put in your mouth in the way of food and drink and its impact on physiology. You know, food is like the so-called body is energy. And there are energies that are integrative, that lift the system up, and there are energies that are disintegrative, tear the system down. I've shared recently that a new level of understanding for me, you know, at Heartland, we have had gardens over the years and grown some of our own food and have always had a focus on a fresh and raw food program, introducing people to a totally different way of eating that helps to shift their taste buds into a different venue than the SAD diet, and the SAD diet is standard American diet. If you're eating what comes out of the grocery store, you are not healthy. And you say, well, Michael, I can run 10 miles, and, you know, I get up at 6 in the morning, I can work till midnight. No, I don't care. It doesn't matter. You're not healthy. Because what comes out of the grocery store, and this is a starting point for health, is so-called, and I say this very carefully, so-called food that's grown in dirt. And my offering is you can't grow food in dirt. it's not possible. Any more than, you know, you plant a seed in soil, which is totally different from dirt. And in soil, you have life, you have different microorganisms, you have things that break down, supply nutrients, you know, all sorts of things happen in soil that don't happen in dirt. You know, growing food, and I put that word very carefully in quotes, growing food in dirt would be like having a dead body and implanting a fetus in it. You can only get life from life. You can't get it from death. If you check out, you know, a lot of what comes out of the grocery store, when it comes from agribusiness, one of the first things they do is pour a gallon of glyphosate on every acre of land to make sure that everything in the dirt is dead before they plant GMO seeds, which require certain chemicals and require a lot of pesticides. Growing on dirt, you're growing death. And what happens when you're growing death is it attracts more death. In other words, there are things called reducer organisms. When plants are weak and can't sustain themselves properly, there's a cleanup crew that comes and eats the plants, destroys them. They're called reduced organisms. Same thing happens within the body. The so-called bacteria and virus is nothing more than a reducer organism. It's no different than a lion on the plains. The lion doesn't go after the biggest, toughest, healthiest, meanest water buffalo in the herd. The lion hangs around the edges of the herd until it sees one that is weak, injured, suffering, can't run well, can't function properly. And the reducer organism takes down the weak of the herd. Well, that's exactly what happens in the body. And if you have so-called food, and I put that in big quotes, if it was grown in death, yes, it's going to take a lot of pesticides because they're reduced organisms and are designed to come and get rid of that stuff that's weak and can't grow properly. So you got to spray, kill, or the reduced organisms are going to get rid of it before you get it out there and convince people that it's food and sell it to them, where it then produces death in them. So you want food that has actual nutrition in it. You want food that's grown on soil. Life comes from life. You get actual life in your food. And then you want to do a reasonable amount of that life raw, because the minute that you take life and put it in a cook pot, it dies. You know, you couldn't take your hand and put it in a boiling pot of water for 40 minutes and say, well, you know, there, I still got a good functioning hand, any more than you can take a vegetable and put it in a pot of water and boil it for 40 minutes and say you've got life left, because there isn't any. So a certain amount of life is required. That's why when we do an intensive, you know, if we do a Heartland intensive, we do a total fresh and raw dietary regimen, you won't see one bite of cooked food in the whole time. And some people are like, oh, my God, I couldn't do that. And by the end of the 9 days or the 16 days or the 65 days, they're like, oh, my God, this is awesome. I can't believe how vital I feel. How, you know, I don't even need caffeine anymore. So we, you know, hold the space or open the space for people to understand more about food. And if you do an online intensive, then we have, and I offer a thank you to Yirate, who did such an awesome job of putting together our private food Facebook page, which is available to those who do intensives. And it lays out the way your kitchen needs to be set up, what equipment you need to do fresh and raw food. And there are 14 weeks of three meals a day of fresh and raw food. And all the instructions, she's got pictures, she's got what to buy, when to buy it, you know, recipes, shopping lists, it's all there. And then there's a recipe program that goes along with it, so that people who do intensives online have got access to some food support. One of the basic things to understand is that in the healing process, the structure is going to go through some symptoms. And if we don't understand that symptoms are symptoms, if we think they're diseases, then the tendency will go to be to go and try and treat it as though it's a disease. And you remember we've talked many times about the idea of healing crisis, and that when you recognize that this so-called body-mind unit is an energy system, it's not a physical device. There are energies that belong in the system and energies that don't. The energies that belong build the system up. The energies that don't tear the system down. In the Aramaic language, the word that represents a tear-down energy relative to your so-called body, the word that represents tear-down is sin. Sin is actually an archery term. When you fart at the target and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper yells, sin, like you're off the mark. Take another shot. You miss the bullseye, take another shot. So when we engage in energetic patterns, physical, mental, emotional, nutritional, that are off the mark, that don't have vitality and life in them, that's called sin. And in Aramaic, when they said the wages of sin is death, they weren't threatening us that, you know, we're going to get punished for sinning. It's just telling us how physiology works. If you put an energy in that doesn't belong, again, whatever level it's on, it's going to begin a destructive process. And when you realize, if you realize that you've been doing that for some time period in your life, or maybe your ancestors have and you recognize that some of that's in your genes, then there's some work to do and you're going to start accessing those energetic dynamics that are off the mark and processing through them. Temptation to run and get a pill is very great in the process of healing. And one of the things that happens as you go through the healing process is that the structure can go back through symptoms on the physical, the mental, and the emotional level. On a physical level, healing looks like any kind of, the healing process, moving into a healing crisis on a physical level looks like any kind of physical symptom you ever had and low energy. That's what is going to happen to you in the process. On a mental level, it looks like any kind of negative thought and confusion. On an emotional level, it's any kind of negative feeling and depression. That's what healing looks like. When you go into a healing process, you want to boost your nutrition, and what the body is usually attempting to do in a healing crisis or healing process is it's attempting to eliminate things that don't belong in the system. It's attempting to clean things out. So there are different categories of foods. There are foods that are called congestors. In the system of medicine that I'm trained in, the primary cause of disease is congestion. And where there's congestion, there's inflammation. There's degeneration as a result of clogged energy that isn't moving through the system properly. And oftentimes when people become symptomatic, especially emotionally, they don't feel good, what they rush off for is for congestors to shut things down. Don't want to feel this. When what they need, and you know, just by way of information, what they need are eliminative foods. They need foods that will move through the system in a way that support and assist the eliminative processes of the body. And we're talking about all of the eliminative organs of the body. We're talking about the skin, the bowel, the urinary tract, mucous membranes, sinuses, lungs. These are all eliminative organs. And if you get hooked into a lifestyle filled with congestors, starches, sugars, and such, then the tendency is to have congestion. And where there is congestion, there tends to be an expansion of tissue. It's called putting on weight. And what one needs to do in order to clean up their lives is start to move more toward an eliminative diet. Jeannie, do you have that post this morning that you shared with me. That was so cute. Somebody had posted on Jeannie's Facebook page, and she shared it with me this morning. Do you have that accessible?
No, but I remember it. It was like, if you see me in my bathing suit this year, mind your own business. I thought we were going to die for the last 3 years, so I've been snacking.
COVID. So anyway, as you go through the healing process, you want to recognize that if you're symptomatic, you want to stay away from the congestors and start using eliminators. Start, you know, things like fresh fruit, vegetables, you know, preferably raw, will tend to lubricate and accelerate elimination. And there's another category of foods is lubricators. Lubricators tend to be very creamy and tasty, so a lot of people like to lock in on the lubricators, but you don't want to overdo them, but you certainly do need lubrication. So these are oils and fats, butter and cream, things like that are lubricators. And then there are builders, and the builders are proteins. Now, the body, when it recycles cells, is designed to conserve protein, and because in our culture, protein is where the money is. You know, dead flesh turns over a lot of profit in the food business, and we've been pushed to believe that we need huge amounts of protein in order to live and survive. When the truth is, when the body breaks a cell down, it conserves the protein. If we overload the system with protein, then the body, it adapts, and one of the first things it does is it throws away the first proteins that come. There's where, you know, if you look through the animal world, you'll see that those animals which are naturally vegetable eaters have teeth, digestive systems, hydrochloric acid concentrations, skin, and bowel structures that are like all other vegetarian animals. Guess what category we're in? The meat eaters have a different structure. You know, if you were really designed to eat meat, you would have lots of canine teeth for tearing flesh. You know, and you would just love it. You know, if you wanted a piece of dead cow, you'd go out and you'd put your teeth around that cow's throat. You'd run it down, you'd tear its throat out, and you'd take a bite, and you'd go, yay, I am a carnivore. But you know what? You can't do that because you're not a carnivore. Oh, you can do all kinds of adaptive things. You can have somebody else takes a gun and shoots the animal and then cuts it up, and then you get to sort of get some nutrition out of it. But it's, if you look at how this structure is designed, and, you know, get out of Madison Avenue, the promo thing that tells you what you're supposed to put in your money in your mouth, and the billions of dollars spent each year in this country to tell people what to put in their mouths, whether it's drugs or food, is just outrageous. It's just such a brainwash. It's not funny. But if you look at all animals that are naturally vegetarian, their structures are very much like ours. Yeah, we do have four canines. What are they for? Well, you've got, you know, tearing vegetables, tearing something. But you don't have cutting, you know, canine teeth to chow down on a piece of raw flesh. We just don't have that. And so, and proteins are the builders, but we don't need nearly as much protein as Madison Avenue would have us believe for the profit motive of agribusiness. And if you have even the slightest concern for the environment, I would offer that as an individual, and you're concerned about the environment, the biggest, most important thing you can do if you're a meat eater is stop and start becoming and move in the direction of being a vegetarian. Because the land use, the forest destruction, the land use that's being done to raise animals so that we can have a Mickey D's burger is tragic. You know, to put a pound of cow flesh on a plate takes about 5,000 gallons of water. If we didn't have government subsidies for agribusiness and lobbyists who keep those government subsidies going, you'd have to pay for what it takes to raise a pound of beef. You'd be talking about $50 a pound. But the taxpayer pays for it, and actually the taxpayer is subsidizing the meat eater's regimen. And then you look at the forest destruction that's happening. It's just, you know, it's outrageous when you understand what's happening on the earth as a result of humans eating meat. But we do need builders, and that's what protein is. And guess what? If you look at mother's milk, a well-rounded, properly grown in soil, properly prepared, properly digested meal of vegetables gives you just the right amount of protein that your structure needs to thrive. And if you look at all of the meat-eating animals, you know, look at the big cats. What do? They sleep 6, 8, 10, 12 hours a day because it takes that much rest in order to have the energy it takes to break down raw flesh and turn it into nutrients. And cooked flesh is much, much worse because the enzymes that are in it naturally that would cause it to break down are eliminated when you cook anything over 100, and depending whose numbers you take, 113 to 116 degrees. It's no longer raw. So understand that there are certainly builders needed. There are lubricators needed, but not an excessive amount. There are eliminators needed, especially if you're in a healing process. And then a certain amount of congesters are okay, but if we overload on them, then the body blows up like a tick. That's what a congested body is. When you go into a healing process, I think back way back in the early days in my naturopathic practice, I used to guide people through a process of that was called a Kalima process. This Kalima program was designed by a man named V.E. Irons. And the last time I saw Vic was on a stage where he was presenting, I was presenting at a conference. And he was, and this goes back 30, 35 years ago, maybe even more. And he was 80 the day I met him, you know, not his birthday, but, you know, he was 80 at that point. And when he got up to speak at the conference, he had his wife come up and hand him his 2-year-old son. And he introduced his son, this man at 80, to the audience. V.E. Irons had created this program called a Kalima program. And it was a 7-day detoxification program. It was very powerful. And in fact, if you want to check it out, you can go to Amazon or any bookstore, I guess. And there's a book that details the Irons program. It's written by a chiropractor. The name of the book is Tissue Cleansing Through Bowel Management. Tissue Cleansing Through Bowel Management by Bernard Jensen. If you want to learn more about cleansing, about healing, some very powerful stuff in that book, and he lays out this Kalima program. And one of the things that happens is when the body becomes overly congested, it, you know, it tends to grow, it tends to expand. And when one gets into a process of healing, what happens is deposits in the body that have dehydrated because it's been cut off. There's something there that's toxic that we don't want to deal with, whether it's physical toxicity, mental, emotional toxicity. The body will cut it off, and it will tend to dehydrate, and when it does, it will shrink. When you take that, when you do the work and you provide nutrients to structure and you hydrate properly, then parts of the structure where that dehydration has occurred will rehydrate, and when it rehydrates, it will tend to expand and blow up. And the most extreme example of that, I remember I was working with a woman in Chicago back years ago, and I was doing a 7-day Kalima program with her, walking her through it. And when she got up in the morning, this particular morning, she looked normal, you know, her normal size, her normal weight. And by about noon, you know, this is, I think, day 5 or day 6, something like that, of the Kalima process, by noon, she literally transformed from getting up in the morning and looking, she was a little bit overweight, but looking normal. By noon, she looked like she was literally physically 9 months pregnant. That's how much her intestines and her stomach swelled up in her healing crisis. By midnight, gone. Her body had eliminated that. But that's part of what happens. And along with that type of cleansing often comes many symptoms. And if people don't understand that symptoms are healing in process, if you're on the right track, and you'll remember in the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, which there is a free copy of the latest version of it. We just did it a couple of weeks ago. It's on the website under events. When one goes into a healing process, one of the things that happens is we'll go back through those old physical symptoms. And as the body unwinds those things, it needs more care. It needs more rest. It needs more support. It needs more hydration and support in elimination, which is why you want to stay away from congestors at that point and eat fresh fruits, vegetables. Apples are one of the best eliminators that there is. It has pectin in it, which tends to loosen deposits throughout the digestive system and help to detox, cleanse, and open the system up. So just a window on some of the things about food that I think are important to understand and go hand in hand with this process of healing and working on every level with your own structure for optimal function. And so then the thoughts I wanted to share about detoxifying symptoms. Remember, on a physical level, healing looks like any kind of physical symptom you've ever had and low energy. On a mental level, looks like any kind of negative thought and confusion. On an emotional level, any kind of negative feeling and depression. Yes, when you go into a healing crisis, parts of your body, it can be anywhere. It could be a foot. It could be an arm. It could be a shoulder. It could be the chest. It could be the belly. It blows up like a tick. Because where there have been deposits that have dehydrated in the tissue, when one is vital enough, when the energy system says, okay, what I packed away in there 25 years ago, I can now undo and deal with, then that tissue rehydrates. And as it rehydrates, of course, it expands and blows up. So being aware of that, understanding that, makes it a whole lot easier to go through the healing process instead of running off and thinking that you've got a disease process and what you need is a drug. So the way you can tell that your symptoms, when you become symptomatic, is you're doing your work, that you're in a healing process as opposed to a disease process, you ask yourself some questions. First question you ask yourself is, have I, in a general way, been doing more and more of the right things? Nutritionally, mentally, emotionally, relationship, exercise. If I have, then that's one check mark out of 4 that says I'm probably in a healing process. Second question you ask yourself is, just before these symptoms struck, had I hit a new level of vitality? If you had a new level of vitality, that says the body can start to detox things that have been hidden. Again, and they might be strictly physical toxins. They might be mental, emotional. If your answer is, yeah, I hit a new level of vitality, then your symptoms are likely healing in process. You've been doing more of the right things. You hit a new level of vitality. Then you ask yourself, what's happening with my elimination? In a healing process, generally speaking, there is a tendency toward increased elimination. And we're talking about the eliminative output of all the eliminative organs, the bowel, urinary tract, skin, mucous membranes, lungs, etc. Except for one case, and that is if the detoxification is happening through the intestines and the colon, the tendency can be for as deposits become start to shake loose and rehydrate, they can tend to end up being very mucousy and very thick and restrictive in their motion. So there can be a restriction there, and you want to really be tuned to yourself to know what's happening, and that's the point to take eliminators in and accelerate the eliminative process, support the eliminative process. Because when, you know, the colon in particular starts to detox, there can be old traumas and pains in there. I know when we would guide people through fasts, there was the thing we used to call intestinal bullets. And if one has, you know, overwhelmed and overloaded the colon too much, there can be a tendency for there to be perforations and or protrusions from the colon. And that can, you know, develop over years. And when you step back into the healing process and you strengthen that tissue, we used to call them intestinal bullets. And that is when a piece of waste material that's been locked into a protrusion from the colon inside breaks loose, it's like it pings to the other side of the colon. It's like, bang, hurts. And so if you notice those sorts of things happening, you can say, yeah, I've been doing the right things. Yes, I had a new level of vitality. Yeah, except for this glue, my elimination's happening. Well, then you want to assist and support the elimination. And then the fourth thing, the question you can ask yourself to really connect with, am I in a healing process or a disease process, is am I craving the drug I used to hide whatever the issue is that I'm now getting ready to approach when it happened, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. So the alcoholic who's been on the wagon for 30 years gets all excited because, gee, they just got their 30-year chip and everybody's celebrating with them and everybody's excited. There's all kinds of love and support there and they're a whole new level of vitality. And they get up in the morning and they're in a healing process. And remember, one of the symptoms of healing is as you start to detox, the energetic patterns that have been suppressed by the structure, the mechanism used to suppress that issue, in this case, say someone who was an alcoholic 30 years ago, when they go into a healing process, literally the energetic pattern, if not the actual molecules of alcohol, are still stored in the tissue that's been shut down. And when it opens up, all of a sudden there's this craving for alcohol or drugs or whatever. If you understand that, it makes it a whole lot easier to resist than the person. You know, we all heard about the guy who got his 30-year chip and the next day fell off the wagon. It's like, what happened? He was so proud of it. He was so excited. He had a whole lot of support. He hit a new level of vitality. He went right into the next level of his healing process. And part of it was the release of the old memories of alcohol. And when they come up, if they take over and somebody isn't conscious and aware of what's going on, that can be the space where one falls back into the pattern. So all of this is, I'm saying in part to really create the support for a broader view of the healing process and building the brain cells for understanding the refined processes that one's going to go through as they step into the healing process. So I hope that makes sense, and if it inspires any questions for anybody, our call-in number, if you're listening to the show on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you have a question for us, you push 1, and you're going to be having a conversation with us. So delighted that you're here. Ms. Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room or anything happening in the phone queue?
No. Someone in the chat room said they really needed to hear this today, so that's good.
Oh, good.
I'll just add, yeah. I'll just add, you know, it's like and I don't know if what I'm going through is part of what triggered your talk today, but
it is.
So people know.
That's exactly what triggered it, yes.
Night before last, I had a terrible pain in my left side right below my rib cage, which is like where the transverse colon then goes to the descending colon. And I didn't say anything. And the next day, Michael saw me holding my side, and he asked me about it. And so he and Aria both were just sending love and rubbing it and putting energy in it. And Aria brought me her favorite book and her stuffed animal and all of this. And she goes, "I'll be right back." She said, "Just breathe, Nene." Last night it was actually like I could see this swollen section that was like maybe 2 inches wide and about 5 inches long going across my abdomen, and it felt like a bruise. And
it looked like a bruise. It was like you were physically bruised.
And so it's, if I didn't know this work and Michael hadn't been there for support and everything, I'd have probably gone to the doctor. And I've been doing eating eliminators for the last 2 days and eating very lightly, and actually going to go do a colonic this evening. And but just staying aware and thinking, what is this that's coming back out? What symptoms is maybe just showing, since I've been going through a lot of process work and healing work, instead of looking at it as a disease process, that it is a healing process, and trying to stay aware of what mentally and emotionally is coming up with it. And just so people know, in the notes for today, I have included the book by Bernard Jensen and some information on colon hydrotherapy, and then the links for the symptoms of healing. And so this probably needs to be an additional MP3 added to those links.
That sounds like a great idea, sweetie.
That's all I had to add. And we've got 12 minutes, so somebody press 1. Let's have a question.
Yeah, we've got plenty of time for conversation, so if you're out there, I can't imagine that there aren't some, overlapping questions, what about this or what about that, or how does this fit or how does that fit? And the reason we're here doing this show is to offer support for, responsive to any questions that you have in relationship to everything to do with healing. So we'll invite you to.
And we have a hand up.
Push 1. Great. Let's say hello.
And this is Miss Julie, 541. Are you back stateside, or are you still roaming?
Oh, I'm back. Yeah.
Well, welcome. Oh. How was your journey?
It was really amazingly wonderful. It was just, it was just like normal life. It felt so healthy for me.
You were in Spain for about 3 weeks?
The Mediterranean coast area. About 3 weeks. And, it was just really healthy. The air was really nice and humid, so the skin felt great. And there were some good farmers markets there and energetic, happy people. And, it's kind of neat when you don't speak a language that there's just all these charades and telepathy that go on anyway,
Right.
You're just connecting. You have to connect, right? It's pretty neat.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but I wanted to say a couple things about what you've been talking about this morning and ask for some specifics. When you said somewhere now back about resistance, when you go kind of fall back into your old habits and you resist. And I was thinking, another way of saying resist, because that kind of, isn't flowing really, it's resisting. But anyway, to undo that would be to overcome the urge. So you recognize the urge of what you're wanting to fall back into, and because you've set up some proper ways of eating, and building habits, then you know that you have a repertoire you know, to go back to and say, oh, if I would just eat an apple, that would give me the right thing. If I can hold off going for something sweet or alcoholic till I get that apple, and am I willing or do I want to fall back? Okay, I'm falling back, but I know how to get back again, you know. And anyway, that was just a little languaging, I guess, if you like that.
Yeah, perfect. Awareness is a big key. Just having the awareness of what's going on. If people are unconscious and oblivious, then whatever inclination comes, people are going to do. And if one is conscious and realizes, oh, this is an old pattern, this is an old inclination, and I choose to live somewhere different, then I'm going to choose to do differently. And that's moving out of the mind of decisions, which is continuous, into the mind where choice exists. Changes everything.
Yeah.
And most people just live in the decisions in their mind. If I say 2 + 2 = 4, equals what? People answer with 4, not because they're thinking, but because that's what's structured in the mind. And that's where most people live, is in decisions. And when you start to go in a different direction, you're bringing in a spiritual muscle, so to speak, and that is choice. And like other muscles, sometimes at first it's like, well, I don't really want to do this. This is difficult. This is a challenge. But with time and practice, choice strengthens and new muscle develops. And we no longer live in decisions, the automatic decision system of the mind, but we bring new choices in and introduce maybe something that none of our generations have ever seen, and therefore are going to have to undo the patterns of the decisions of the generations to bring about a different outcome.
Mm-hmm. So, and actually, if you have been doing all the right things and you do look at this new item occurring, whether it's a new symptom of physical, like Jeannie was speaking, you know, some new occurrence or new level, but falling back onto a habit, you know, the ability to recognize that you're still in this healing process. So it doesn't mean, oh no, I'm falling back, I give up forever. It just means that, yeah, I get back on the horse. And so that reminded me of one of the things of being insane is we ate better. There were no processed food places. We saw 2 McDonald's and 2 Burger Kings and maybe a Kentucky Fried Chicken, and they were all in the same spot of real estate, you know, and they were empty. They were empty.
Where people go to buy poison.
To them. Yeah. I know. So, and I've already stopped eating at those places anyway, but we just ate better. And so my friend especially, he's really working on health issues, or has some to work on, and he felt like he did gain some ground, came back healthier, lost weight, everything, his skin healed
nice.
Up. And so, but coming back now, it's that resistance and falling back into the habits of our American lifestyle, and that's what needs to be, I guess, more awareness. Yeah.
Well, again, yeah, that's it exactly. When I see that, it benefited me to do something different. And yes, there are habits, and to get out of the habit mind is a big issue. You know, one of the things we've been doing since we, you know, moved here to be with Jeannie's dad is we've started growing gardens. We've actually developed 3 different garden spaces, built soil right from literally from the ground up, because all we had was basically clay and a little bit of dirt that grass was growing in, but there was nothing that could grow in it in the way of food. And been realizing that it's worth the, you know, I've had people who say, well, I just don't have time for that. I'm too busy. You know, it's not worth it. And when you realize that, one, you actually get to interact with the soil, and there are healing energies within soil, just getting your hands in soil is a healing process on its own. If somebody's in a disease process, it can be a very important place to go to start developing the soil, to start growing your own food and start eating actual food that's grown in soil rather than dirt, and getting actual nutrition. It's a really important key.
Yeah, I really hear you. I've been really wanting to get started with soil and things like that. But I just realized I have to go, and I'll call back tomorrow with my question about food.
Cool.
It's basically about...
All right,
about,
last one. Glad you're back safely.
Yeah, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye. Thank you.
Bye. All right, take care. Okay, bye.
That made me think of Monday. We had gone to our local Mellow Mushroom. They have pretty healthy choices, and they also have $10 pizzas on Monday night, so that's our date night. But Ari and I were sitting there, and we were talking to our waiter, and he was really interested in why we were ordering goat cheese instead of cow cheese and why we weren't drinking. And Aria was pretending to be Michael. And so she said, I don't drink with my meal. I mean, a drink came with the child's meal. And she said, no, she didn't want it. That she was Papaw, and she didn't drink with her meal. And he was asking why. And so I was explaining it to him. And then in a little bit, you know, I was talking about being vegetarian and not vegan. And we talked about the difference of that. And Aria says, when I'm at Nene and Papaw's, I eat like them. But when I'm at home, I don't.
Her parents are meat eaters.
But she's getting the brain cells. And even with her dolls the other day, she was playing with the kitchen, and she picked up a box that was, you know, supposed to be cupcake mix or whatever in her toy kitchen. And she goes, oh, no, this has sugar in it, you know. And she would do something else, and she'd say, I made this with grape juice, not sugar. So, I mean, she is really getting a lot of information you would think that a 3.5-year-old it wouldn't even grasp. And so it's awesome to be able to live the example for her.
And this is a fun game that she and I play. I'm Aria Rain, and she's Papaw. So we change everything up. So I do what Aria Rain would do, and she does what Papaw would do. And I wasn't at the table when that conversation took place. And I was kind of pleasantly surprised to hear that she just, you know, she recognizes I don't drink when I eat a meal. And she's like, well, I'm Papaw and I don't drink. So she gave her drink back to the waiter. It's like, it's so cool. So cool to watch this little one just develop her wisdom and bring it forward. It's pretty awesome. So we appreciate having time with you each day, and look forward to the next time we get to talk. You know, keep a notebook as you're doing worksheets, as you're working with the tools. Keep a notebook with questions, and then when the show comes along, you don't have to go, what was that question? You know, the shortest pencil is better than the longest memory, or you've probably got a smartphone that has a notepad function. Keep notes on questions as they come up, and come on, push one during the show, and let's talk about it. So thank you for joining us, and in the meantime, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.